Maritime Matters, global perspectives through a German lens for the maritime industry. We bring the German perspective to the world and global insights to Germany. Maritime Matters is produced by the German Maritime Center, the think tank for the German maritime sector.
Welcome to our podcast. My name is Matthias Katon. I'm the managing director of the German Maritime Center and your host. Our topic today is rather broad. We will talk about maritime business in transition, competition, innovation, and resilience. And the breadth of that topic reflects the breadth of knowledge and competencies of my guest today, which is Burkhard Sommer. Burkhard is a partner at PwC, and he heads the Maritime Competence Center in Hamburg. He has more than 21 years of experience in the maritime industry, so that's quite a lot. Before joining PwC in 2004, Burkhard worked for a family-owned automotive supplier. He holds a diploma of business administration from the University Nord Academy in Elmshorn, where he specialized in controlling, strategic management, and business valuation. Today, Burkhard leads an expert network of more than 120 specialists, so that is a lot, who focus on the maritime industry and work with clients worldwide. And over the years, he has advised some of the largest shipping companies, shipyards, their suppliers, ship financing banks, private equity firms, ports, terminal operators, logistics companies, and defense businesses. And I could go on, so you get the feeling, you know, that he has worked everywhere in the industry. His work covers mergers and acquisitions, business strategy, due diligence, restructuring, turnaround solutions, and more. First of all, Burkhard Sommer, thank you very much for taking the time and to come here to our studio for this episode.
Thanks for having me.
Burkhard, you grew up in Barmstedt, which is a small town near Hamburg, where we are right now. So you've been close to one of Germany's largest port cities for most of your life, I guess. But you actually started in the automotive industry, as I just mentioned. What brought you to shipping and logistics?
Well, it was coincidence. I never planned it, to be honest. I started in a family-owned company for my dual study, automotive, which seemed to be typical German, but no direct connection to maritime business or something else. But at the end of my studies, I want to reorientate myself, and by random, I met a guy of PwC, Klaus Brandt, you already know, who is quite specialized not only, but as well on shipping clients, and convinced me to join PwC as an auditor. And my first client was Hapag-Lloyd. And I guess the people there were quite bored by telling young guys every year what they audit. So they want to have a profound understanding of the people, which is, I think, absolutely understandable, about the industry they are in, how the business functions, etc. So they were quite nice spending quite a time to tell me how the industry works, how different things are connected, etc. And, well, if you like something and you feel something is right, you get passionate about it. And so I liked working in that field. And over the years, I guess, by random, or if you are doing a good job, so others have to judge it, you get more and more jobs in that field. And so starting with one shipping liner, additional shipping companies were added to my portfolio, worked on several shipyards. At that time, there was the Sita shipyard in Hamburg as well, which unfortunately is not there anymore. But by time to time and time after time, I get more and more access to maritime clients, the supply industry, etc., and really passionate about the industry, the people working there, because we are in some kind of very special industry. It's a niche industry in Germany, but it is globally. You're acting with people all over the world. You are connected to worldwide developments, etc. So quite special surrounding, and I liked it from the beginning. And that was the reason why, how to say, I gained more and more experience in that field and stayed within the industry, but in a consultancy role supporting the industry.
Yeah, very interesting. So you got into it by coincidence, one might say, but you never left because you liked it so much. And that was actually what many people told me when I moved into my current role and moved into the maritime sector, that people told me, well, when you get into that industry, you seldomly leave, or people seldomly leave. So that's quite interesting. And by the way, to tell our listeners that, you know, after all, the world is small. You mentioned Klaus Brandt, who was at PwC for a long time. He is also my predecessor in my current job. So sometimes people move around in the industry, but they seldomly move on to other fields, it seems. The Maritime Competence Center, and I mentioned that you have 120 staff in that competence center alone, which is a lot, makes me a bit jealous because the German Maritime Center is only about 20 people or so strong. How did that come to be, that there's such a massive expertise concentrated in one consulting firm in the city of Hamburg?
I guess it's grown historically, so we have some kind of a heritage, starting or having our footprint majorly as an audit company. And before the shipping crisis, I guess we did mostly tax work, accounting work, which is natural in that kind of industry. But with the shipping crisis, additional expertise was needed. So we extended quite a lot, added a lot of people who then joined, for example, restructuring department, who specialized especially in the banking field on shipping portfolios, etc. So gained a lot of experience in that time and grew a lot. And recognizing that Germany was one of the major shipping nations in that time. We are still important, but other nations might have bigger fleets now. Nevertheless, we were some kind of the center of ship findings in that time, remembering that the HSH Nordbank was a large shipping financing bank in that time. And with that, we were able to grow. And then recognizing that this kind of expertise, this special expertise, which is consolidated in one city mostly, in Hamburg, is not there in other shipping nations. And therefore, we were able to go to other countries, to use our knowledge, to bring it to other countries, and therefore build up relationships with the players there, which we are still benefiting from today. So working globally, supporting local PwC teams in maritime matters, and not only within Europe, but worldwide, being it South America, being it Asia, etc. So that's the reason as well why the department overall is quite a large one, covering all usual segments, assurance, so audit, tax advisory, but all other advisory services, and acting globally, supporting local teams and local expert centers like we have in Greece, of course, in Singapore, etc.
This extraordinary size in terms of the number of staff, but also the topic breadth, would you say that gives you a unique view of the maritime industry that is maybe unparalleled?
That would mean that I have an overview over all other perspectives and all other companies who might have a perspective regarding developments in the industry, etc. I would say we have a very broad view. We have a very international view, and we have a view from large corporations to small to very small corporations. I wouldn't say that's unique, but it's special. And I think you do not find it that much in the industry.
Now, let's get a little bit into the industry, the maritime business, and where the industry stands today. If we look at German shipping companies, numbers seem to be good, although the outlook is, as always, cautious. We live in very volatile times. Generally speaking, what would you say? Is the German shipping business in good shape right now, and will it maintain that edge?
I think we improved over time. We all faced the shipping crisis the time afterwards. We see names with a long history disappear, only a few new names coming up. But nevertheless, those companies which survived the crisis reorientated themselves, adapted new technologies, adapted different structures, reorganized themselves, etc. So that I would say we are now in a other shape, in a better shape, maybe than we were before the crisis, so that we are a little bit more resilient now than we were before, because maybe there was no need to be that kind of resilience. Now we recognize it is necessary that you're surviving some kind of storms coming up. And we are now, as you said, in a quite uncertain time. And therefore, it's a benefit that those companies reorganized themselves, became more professional when it comes to the management, etc. So I would say we are in a good shape, but nevertheless, we have a lot of challenges ahead. The uncertainty mentioned, sustainability issues, reinvestment issues when it comes to the smaller part of the fleet, so feeder classes, etc., which need to be reinvested or replaced, and then there's a need of new vessels. So quite a long list of challenges, but nevertheless, I guess we're a little bit more capable now to manage all of these challenges than we were 20 years ago.
Cautiously optimistic. PwC, under your leadership, publishes a widely received study every year called Räderstudie in German, probably in English, Ship Owners or Ship Operators Study. And there, I believe, in the last publication, you said that most German shipping companies expect revenue to grow in 2026. Is that still something that you think is likely?
I would say that the revenue might maintain on a quite stable level. Maybe there will be some kind of a decrease as well, possible, due to all the things we are facing now. Nevertheless, we are, and this attaches to every class, coming from a very high level, still from a very high level. So I think a normalization of certain rates will continue. And maybe there will be as well a certain improvement on specific routes for specific cargo due to the limitations we see at the moment. But overall, I would say we will see more or less a normalization going on that market.
Now, a lot of it also has to do with regulatory frameworks. And you mentioned, of course, the need to adapt increasingly alternative fuels to meet the CO2 emission goals. A bit differently, but also very important in the regulatory framework, the European Commission recently published its industrial maritime strategy. What's your take on that?
In general, I guess it's good that we have some kind of an overall strategy for Europe, as well as we have some kind of a maritime strategy for Germany. I think what's important is how it came to life. Having ideas, intentions is good, but these have to work. They have to be adapted. And we have to see how the different member states are now reacting, what they do to bring it to life, and how different opinions from the industry as well will shape it a little bit more.
Nautical numbers.
Every episode, we ask our guests to bring one number that pertains to the topic of the episode. What is your nautical number?
My number is 189 million. And now I may ask you, what do you connect with this number?
198 million. So that's a very large number. 189. Sorry. See, it's so big that I couldn't even remember it. What could that be? I have no idea.
It's the amount of money the Foundation Shipping Standort Deutschland, Schifffahrtsstandort Deutschland, has spent from 2013 to the end of 2025 for supporting the training of officers, seafarers, engineers, etc. So helping to stabilize the number of maritime personnel. And I think it's a quite interesting number because it's money from the industry for the industry. And so a quite interesting solution how the industry itself can stabilize certain developments and maybe as well be attractive for companies to train people. Because in the end, we need them. We need them as pilots. We need them after they've done their service in the ports, etc. We need them in the companies, understanding what it's like to steer a ship, to maintain a ship, etc. They haven't done it on a regular basis. And so it's quite interesting. That's quite a lot of money which went into the industry.
Indeed. Very interesting. I didn't know that. So now you have to explain, of course, for our listeners, not all of who come from Germany, what is the foundation? What does it do? How does it work? And what problem does it solve?
So we have the overall problem that, unfortunately, the German fleet was shrinking. With the shrinking of the fleet, unfortunately, the number of seafarers as well decreases. Remembering that the foundation had been founded in a time where the economic situation wasn't that good, there was an instrument needed to motivate and to provide companies with money to still train people. Because, as I said, we need them. They are coming from the service, being on a ship, even on onshore operations. And so there was the idea to say, okay, if we flag out vessels, there will be a certain amount of money you have to pay to the foundation. And the foundation will take care of that money and spend that money on the education, on the training of seagoing personnel. And it's not only now the training, the basic training, but it is as well things for further training, which are now as well allowed, again allowed, to benefit from that scheme. And so the industry helped itself, if you want to say it that way.
Is that a model, since you mentioned it, that might also be interesting for other countries to emulate?
I guess so. I think at the moment we have a quite unique solution, but I think it's an interesting solution for every country who have the issue that they need more and more people going to sea, or they want to stabilize the number of people coming to the industry, working in that industry. But at the moment in Germany, we have some kind of a unique solution.
Now, we mentioned earlier that you have a very broad overview of the maritime industry as a whole. The maritime industry consists of different sub-sectors that are very distinct in certain ways. Shipbuilders, for example, very different business models to ship operators or ship owners, for example. But there's also, I would say, some areas that are becoming increasingly blurry, especially when it comes to ship owners or ship operators, logistics companies, port operators. And we've seen some consolidation, including some, I think, in which you were involved. So you may not be able to go into all the details, but maybe generally speaking, so the Danish logistics company DSV that acquired DB Schenker, that was a major acquisition. We also see increasingly shipping companies becoming involved in terminal business or port operations here in Hamburg, but also elsewhere. How do you see on a macro level these changes? Who is winning? Who's losing? How are these tectonic shifts affecting the industry as a whole?
Maybe we should begin with why our companies are doing this. And what we recognize, or the companies recognize as well, that they were highly exposed only being active in one sector, of course, to the development in this sector. And so to spread out business operations, to have some kind of a footprint in different sectors nearby would make your company a little bit more resilient and you benefit from the whole supply chain or from the extended supply chain. That was the reason why a lot of these, at that moment when this kind of consolidation wave started, cash-rich shipping companies, shipping liners, started to add on services to their established shipping service. I think we can't ignore that few of them still have this kind of operations quite a long time. For example, the logistics part of SEMA-CGM, Maersk had extensive terminal activities, etc., etc. So they are not absolutely new to the market, but it was, let me call it, an overall trend to extend the footprint there. And remembering that during the shipping crisis and afterwards, the companies were in a tight competition, not really benefiting from the freight rates because they were not that high at the moment, etc. They didn't have the money to invest broadly in that segment. And now, not only due to COVID, but as well in connection to the pandemic and everything happening there, they were able to earn enough money to then extend the footprint in the logistics industry. So that a few of them as well entered not only seaborne operations, terminal operations, and land logistics, but as well aircraft operations, which is as well some kind of a special sector, not at a large scale, but on certain routes. And so larger shipping corporations becoming more and more integrated logistics, even if they would say we are still having our core, now a core business, driving the business. Of course, they have now different pillars where their business is basing on.
Is that a trend that you think will continue to the point that some people say or predict that the era of the independent terminal operator, for example, will come to an end and all terminals will in one way or another belong to one of the big shipping lines?
I think if you're looking at the market, the question is, who is for sale and who can be added to the existing portfolio? You have to consider, of course, competition rules. So very big deals are not very likely. But nevertheless, a lot of these companies have, to a certain extent, reorganized themselves, have added capabilities to their portfolio. And so the number of future acquisitions at a larger scale might be a little bit more limited. you're asking for the independence of terminal operators. Well, you can see it as well the other way. Maybe the terminal operators as well, and we know some of them, for example, Middle East, as well trying to extend their business model, entering new business services, adding logistic capacities to their operations, adding shipping capacities to it. So I think it's a development going on different sites. The question still is, are there targets big enough to have, let me call it, some kind of a disruptive development in the industry? And there I would say, I think this kind of deals might be limited in the future, but nevertheless, kind of consolidation, a kind of adding selective services and companies to the own portfolio might go on.
You said who is for sale, but again, sometimes the argument also goes in a different way. So for example, the city of Hamburg, of course, has famously decided to sell, 49.9% of HHLA, the big publicly owned or formerly publicly owned port operator in Hamburg, to MSC. And the argument is highly controversial. Some people are very much in favor of it. Some people are highly against it. I guess we'll have to wait and see now to find out. But the argument put forward by the proponents and the city of Hamburg was that they needed to get a strong shipping line on board and economically tied to the interests of the terminals in order to assure business. So it was not just that they happened to want to sell it and then there was a company coming up, but they strategically said, we have to have this alliance. Is that also something that you believe will play a role in future maybe deals?
It will play a role, but not only talking about Hamburg, talking about ports itself. You need a certain amount of turnover in cargo to guarantee and to maintain this kind of surplus add-on in cargo floating in, going out. It's good to have partners who provide that kind of stability, especially if you have to make huge investments. And we know, especially from the Northern European ports, that there's still a lot of investment needed to put them up on speed. So it's good to have strong partners on the one side. On the other side, of course, there's always a consideration to say, if we're going with this partner, might there be others who might be offended in some kind of way if you're concentrating on one partner and therefore we switch cargo to other destinations, etc. And so it's a more or less, let me call it, a gamble, a strategic game going on in that industry. As I mentioned, not talking about Hamburg, talking about all ports all over the world. You can have the same discussion in Middle East where you have a lot of capable ports and they are all constructed for big volumes. But they are, how to say it, they can see each other. They are quite nearby. And there's always the question, why should one benefit from volumes, the other not? And so they are seeking partners. They're seeking guaranteed volume so that the investment makes sense. And this is going on all over the world.
At the same time, of course, security being as predominant a topic as it is right now, these deals often are also highly controversial. Again, mentioning a Hamburg example a couple of years ago, the minority stake of Costco in one of the terminals here in Hamburg raised a lot of discussion and anxiety. In other parts of the world, we see, for example, in Panama, we see the port investments of C.K. Hutchison coming under fire for political reasons. How will that play out? Will we go back to defining these parts of our industry of strategic importance and hence only allowed in national hands or maybe, you know, limited to a certain number of friendly, for example, European neighbors?
Honestly, and despite the ownership structure, they are of real strategic importance. I think this is some kind of an issue we always have as people, let me call it, from the north, talking to people in south of Germany or other parts of the country to tell them how important our ports or the ports nearby are, considering that we are an export industry, or we still are an export industry. So ports are very important. Ports are always some kind of a strategic bottleneck to enter and to get access to a local economy or to, how to say, bring the cargo, bring the goods out of it, export it to other countries. So they are always of strategic importance and bottlenecks. And now having an additional layer from the security perspective, if we are talking not only about civil cargo as well as military cargo and surplus guaranteeing this, I think it makes it even clearer how important ports and functional infrastructure are. By that, I think it makes sense that we look who might be a good partner to partner on in such a strategic role, in such a strategic place. And I think that's fair, checking out if a certain setup might be the right one or not.
Mm. You can, of course, also extend to other sectors of the maritime business. If you talk to the ship owners, for example, they will also tell you, well, we are strategically important. It's very important to have German ship owners or German shipping lines, to have a German fleet, not for economic reasons alone, but also for security reasons in the end. And likewise, shipbuilders will tell you the same. So it's very important that we have a domestic shipbuilding industry for strategic autonomy or strategic interests. As a consultant, how do you approach these certainly valid arguments on the one hand, with, of course, the economic need or necessity to maintain an open economy, where we know that in principle, you know, an open economy that allows free investments, etc., will always be beneficial. So how do you balance these two demands for, might call it more protectionism on the one hand, and an open economy that at the end of the day has also benefited Germany quite well over the past 50, 60 years?
The good thing is that we still have a lot of friends and partners all over the world where there are, let me call it, enough alternatives to go to within Europe as well as abroad to partner on. And always the question, if you take a majority or if you take some kind of participation with the different roles, you have different kind of access to information to steer a company, etc. So it depends on how you want to play that kind of model. And you still have options. So you're not limited to one player coming along and say, I want to steer the company, I want to steer the operation. You have others as well, and then you can choose. And I think this is something where we can say, okay, it combines the liberalism we need in our economy. And on the other side, of course, having some kind of an view on the security and strategic issues connected to that.
So that's the famous concept of friend shoring, probably. Is that maybe the idea is that we select the partners more carefully, the countries that we let into our strategically important industry?
I think it's something we should do in general, right? If we're talking about a strategic sector, it's always good to have friends or partners with you and people you can trust to a certain extent. And therefore, we should always, if we're conducting deals in a strategic field, check out diligence, if it is a good decision or not, or what the benefits on the one side, and maybe the more challenging issues are on the other side.
Now, talking about money and investments, I think one area that we should also cover is ship financing. Ship financing used to be strong in Germany, and most of it disappeared during the financial crisis of 2008. I think you were already working in that industry at that time. Is there a possibility to bring some of that capacity back? And the question, or the reason why I'm asking, is that, of course, when we talk about strategic necessities, a lot of the complaints or the critical comments from ship owners that I at least hear is that, you know, the lack of financing options in Germany is a major issue. And it's maybe not the only one, but certainly one issue that also propels ship owners to buy ships in China, not only because they think that the prices are right, but also because the Chinese, of course, they provide the financing or the leasing options. Can we bring ship financing back to Germany in pre-2008 levels?
I think it's difficult to bring it back to pre-2008 levels. Just imagine, for example, the HHH Nordbank I mentioned before. I had a shipping portfolio with over 32 billion at that time, or a little bit more, remember correctly. I think it's not very likely that we will see a lot of banks going that way, extending the operations in this very specific field to that amount. It was another time. The conditions are now a little bit different, for good reasons, I have to say. I think there will be some kind of a recovery in that field, but not a full build-up to the certainly a little bit unhealthy levels we saw at that time. We have now other tools in the toolkit. We have companies opting for example, stock market options, not going full on US stock exchange, due to regulations, costs, etc., connected to that. But maybe looking, for example, at Oslo Børs and all these near stock market options you have, if you're looking at the Norwegian market, you have certain banks still in Germany who are financing shipping, who are looking to extend operations, etc. You have other European banks still in that kind of business. But of course, they will look more carefully on the financing than they did pre-2008. It was this kind of Wild West we had in that time. I hope we will not see
Okay. Yeah, so the pendulum swung in the other direction for good reasons. Maybe it has to swing a little bit back, but not to the levels that we saw in those earlier days.
Navigators, table.
Another very important part of our podcast. We ask all our guests to bring us a recommendation for a restaurant, a bar, whatever it is, something that has a connection to the maritime world. Burkhard, what is your navigator's table? What do you recommend our listeners should go to?
It's a restaurant, Neil, in St. Pauli. You might be, if I'm talking about a very good restaurant, offering a very good menu to a decent price of high quality every month. You might wonder if you go there, of course you go maybe via the Schanze, you go via the Heiligen Geistfeld, you go via St. Pauli, and you might have the feeling something might not be right because the outskirts doesn't feel fitting to that high-class restaurant on the one side. On the other side, it adds some kind of a flavor because, as I said, very good quality, very interesting menu, changing every month, a decent price, which is totally acceptable for the quality you get, and a nice neighborhood, which is quite interesting to see. High-class kitchen on the one side and, how to say it, a little bit more relaxed leisure feeling around. It's a personal recommendation to visit the restaurant Neil in Hamburg. And if you or you recognize from the name, you're asking, it is not only near the port, where its location, it is as well having some kind of maritime in its name with the name of the Neil River. So it's worth visiting.
That's a great recommendation. And of course, St. Pauli, the world famous nightlife district, which I think has its history also in being an area where seafarers went when they were ashore and had a good time. So definitely recommend to go check out that restaurant. And as always, we will put the link in the show notes so that people can find it there. I would now like to talk a little bit about transformation, not so much on the macro level, but more on the specific technical level. And of course, we all know that decarbonization is a major issue, a major challenge for not just the shipping industry, but also the shipping industry. We have the EU mechanism that is in place. We were supposed to have the net zero framework of the IMO in place by now. That did not happen because that was blocked or at least officially postponed in the fall. From your perspective, how is that regulatory framework evolving? Are we still moving in the right direction? Have we stopped? Are we maybe backtracking?
I think it's clear now, and you hear the voices of the industry saying it's highly likely that we are not meeting our goals in time. Nevertheless, the overall development will go on. Now we, as you've mentioned, have a few blockers on the road. The question is, in the next 2 to 3 years, the situation might change significantly because we all know where these roadblocks are coming from. But nevertheless, the overall trend with regard to decarbonization and to invest on alternative fuels, alternative and new technology, etc., I think will go on. Maybe we will see a certain slowdown as we recognize now because other topics might be a little bit more in the spotlight, but the overall development will go on. And so new technologies are needed, need to be implemented, need to be economically feasible to make the change happen. And I just see it a little bit slowing down, but still having the same direction.
Okay, so you're cautiously optimistic. At least we're not completely at a standstill. Now, of course, when we talk about technology in the maritime business, the decarbonization topic is always top of mind and still so, I would say, but it's not the only change that we're witnessing. And digitalization is another one, and especially the rise of artificial intelligence that is promising or threatening, depending on how you see it, to revolutionize many sectors, also the maritime industry. Which areas do you think are rifest for disruption when it comes to AI?
I think there where you can make an easy win, where you can make an easy gain, replacing repetitive tasks, for example, checking documents, invoices, etc. So helping to get rid of still the big amount of paper we have in that kind of industry, supporting checks, business decisions with it. Of course, it's not the disrupting big solutions if we're talking AI guiding vessels, etc. But in the end, these are the small parts where AI today is still supporting companies to getting more efficient, to lighten people of work, which is quite time consuming and maybe as well quite boring, and therefore enabling them to work on other topics to a larger extent. And so I think these are areas, especially when it comes to processes and administration, where AI today is making a difference. And we have to see how it might evolve if we have more AI with regard to ship steering, efficiency of engines, changing or choosing the best routes, reacting on time, etc. This as well could be quite interesting to see. At the moment, we see a lot of projects going on, a lot of tests, for example, when it comes to pilotage systems, etc. But they are still in a test phase. So we have to wait when the technology is mature enough so that you will see it in certain regions acting on their own and not being just support for the people operating there.
Would you say that the industry in that respect is sometimes also very traditionalist or very cautious when it comes to embracing the benefits of these technologies? Talking, for example, about autonomous shipping or at least semi-autonomous shipping, which is highly contested by different groups for all sorts of reasons. But do you feel that maybe other industries are sometimes more innovative when it comes to the application of these technologies?
Honestly, I guess so, yeah. We are a conservative industry. We are not an early adopter of new technologies. Sometimes makes sense. If you are waiting for technology becoming more mature, you do not have the flaws and mistakes, issues you have by implementing an industry at a very early stage. Mostly it's cheaper, it's more common. People are used to work with the kind of technology. So yes, I think we're a little bit more conservative than in other industries, even if you do not like to hear it.
So. Yeah, people never like to hear that, but it's interesting that you agree, because there was also, especially when it comes to shipping, I heard a lot of reservations even to minor improvements, which at least from my perspective would work fairly well. I mean, one example is assistance for lookouts and things like that, that I believe many of them are even today better than humans in many aspects, detecting obstacles and stuff like that.
Maybe it's still a thing where we can say combining technology with human knowledge and experience, I think it's still the key. Yeah. So even if you're looking at current AI solutions we might use every day, if you go to normal Google, Harvey, etc. solutions helping you with certain topics for research or whatever, yeah. If you have certain expert knowledge, then you will often find out that you might have, let me call it, another angle, that you have another view, adding real value to the thing the machine might get out of the system. This might change over the time.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I think it's still the combination of both human intelligence together with artificial intelligence making a change. And as I said, there are certain projects in place and there are certain solutions as well working, but they are not groundbreaking at the moment. And shipping tend to be, and maybe based on the large volume of investment as well. So if you're buying a vessel, if you're building a vessel, it's a huge investment. So you're a little bit more careful where you spend your money on. Mm. Because ideally, the vessel, the operations should last for the next 15 to 20 years. And I think this is as well some kind of a mindset for the industry, not making, let me call it, short-term decisions, but having some kind of a long-term perspective before deciding to go this or another way.
Another area where being at the frontier of technology is shipbuilding. Shipbuilding overall volumes in Germany have declined over the past decades. Large container ships, for example, are not being built in Germany anymore. Last year, I believe China alone had about 60 to 70% of the order book for new ships. Koreans are still also quite large, but Germany is essentially limited to a certain segment of very high class or very complex ships. Cruise ships, of course, large yachts, luxury yachts, and all sorts of special or specialized vessels for offshore and other things.
And military vessels.
Military as well, it's true. Yeah. You're right, which for reasons better or worse is going quite well, that industry right now. How do you think that the German shipbuilding industry can maintain its cutting edge to be competitive, at least in those sectors, despite the arguably high costs that will probably also not change in the future? We will not become a low-cost country, I guess.
Still trying to develop new ideas, spend money and cooperate with, for example, scientific companies, working on new production approaches, working on new technologies, working on new materials, etc. So being some kind of a quality leader, being some kind of an innovative leader, because if we are talking about mass production, we should not try to mess ourselves with China for simple vessels or even more developed vessels, but quite simple ones. The same for Japan, Korea. They have a certain size, they have a certain capacity we do not have anymore, but we have other things. And we're quite good, as we recognized, in some part of defense vessels, building the defense vessels, very complex vessels. I have a certain age when it comes, as you mentioned, to cruise ships, to explorer vessels, etc. So every time when it becomes a little bit more complicated, when it becomes more technically advanced, etc., then Germany might be a good location to go to. If you want to have something special, you talk about luxury yachts. But nevertheless, if we're not keeping that kind of pace, if you're not investing, if you're not caring to look for innovation, then we will fall behind. Then it's likely that after a certain amount of time, other countries where we now say they are not capable of building that kind of quality in these specific segments will take over the role we have in the market. So we have to still push, we have to still look for innovative solutions, etc. This is the kind where we are able to survive in that market.
Is there also, do you see possibilities for growth outside of Germany for example, shipbuilding or supply companies? And I'm specifically asking with one country in the back of my mind, which I know reasonably well, which is India, that has, among many other things, also very, very ambitious goals when it comes to the maritime sector, in terms of shipbuilding capacity, in terms of ports being built, in terms of a fleet that is supposed to be set up, Indian merchant fleet. Are there possibilities for German companies to invest, to cooperate, to do business?
Clearly, they are. Especially if you mentioned in India, a lot of other countries, a lot of investors are doing it now, coming from the US, coming from Middle East, etc., and investing in Indian companies. I think it's as well a good option for German companies to look at certain facilities in India, cooperating with them, investing in that area. There's always the question if you come a little bit too late to the party, but I think there's still an opportunity as well for German companies to have some kind of a stake in that market.
I understand you correctly that you're saying that we are on the verge of coming a bit too late to the party, so it's now or never, basically, or the earlier the better?
No, there are always trends going through the industry. And at the moment, it seems to be quite, for good reasons, to be quite trendy to look at India and to go for Indian yards, etc. If we were talking, for example, with regard to the US, then you see companies from Asia as well looking to India with US contracts to say, okay, together with our shipbuilding knowledge and the facilities we might buy in India, we might be able to add something to the intended US new building program, etc. So India seemed to be quite hot as an investment place at the moment, but we know there are always trends going through the industry as well. And as I said, we have an uncertain world at the moment. I think therefore we should observe and not only concentrate on one country looking at it, but as well looking at other countries who might have potential with regard to investments.
We live in a volatile world. That is probably the only thing that's not going to change. So change is the new constant, as they say. Burkhard, we've come to the end already of our episode. We've covered a lot of ground, but I think that was also fascinating to see how all these things are always interconnected. So you can't really look at one aspect only in isolation, because they're mutually influenced and sometimes also enforced. It was very, very interesting. Thanks again for taking the time. And I look forward to having you back in the not too distant future, hopefully for another episode. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you learned something new. If you like the show, please leave us a review and a rating on your favorite podcasting platform. And don't forget
to check out the show notes and more information about the German Maritime Center at maritimemetas.de.